for me, transforming potentiality talks about the capacity of poetic language to change our views of the world, and in a way, it has a political force as well, because we are finding ways to imagine other futures in which we feel more free to rearrange what constrains us as individuals and collectives, and reach in many ways.
You're listening to Speaking of Language, a podcast recorded at the Language Resource Center at Cornell University. Each week, we explore a topic related to language pedagogy and second language acquisition. This week, on Speaking of Language,
Juliana Torres joins us to discuss the transformative power of narrative, particularly as expressed through women writers of Latin America.
Welcome to a new episode of Speaking of Language. I'm Angelica Kramer, the director of the Language Resource Center at Cornell University.
And I'm Sam Lupowitz, the LRC's media manager. We are excited to speak with Juliana Torres today, whose dissertation explores forms of monstrosity from a queer perspective in a selection of 20th century Latin American women writers.
Welcome to Speaking of Language, Juliana.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm very excited to be here.
And we are glad to have you.
Yes. So before we dig into your research, we would love to hear a little bit about your background and path with languages. What does that look like for you?
Yes, sure. Oh, well, I'm a Spanish native speaker, mm-hmm. and I studied a BA in literary studies. So I've been obsessed with, you know, language and literature in Spanish from a very young age. Mm-hmm. And also English has been with me from since I'm a child, you know.
Yeah.
And I also am fascinated by languages. I am also, I know a little Portuguese, and I've been exposed to Portuguese through, you know, my relationship with friends. And when I was living in New York, I also had the opportunity to take some Japanese writing classes,
oh, nice.
Which was very interesting to see that combination of the visual mm-hmm. in the writing, and it's a very, very beautiful language. And well, I also have a friend who's a Quechua speaker,
mm-hmm.
and I went to visit her in Ecuador, so I was exposed to the language as well.
Nice.
I don't manage the language, but it has influenced my own writing and my sensibility in language after knowing all the different nuances of this indigenous idiom, no? So that's kind of it. And I'm constantly, you know, moving between Spanish and English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you are a PhD candidate here at Cornell in Romance Studies, focused on Latin American literature and culture, also with a minor in Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Studies. Tell us about your dissertation research.
Oh, wow. Yes, I'm now working on my dissertation. I'm studying the literary work of three female writers mm-hmm. of the 20th century. One is Uruguayan, the other is Colombian, and the third one is from Bolivia.
Hmm.
And I'm exploring how they work on the figure of the monstrous from a queer perspective, which means they are challenging the traditional forms of femininity mm-hmm. and other mm-hmm. gender constructions of the time, and creating this eccentric and fascinating characters in their works. One of them is a poet. The other two are like experimental writers writing like novels that also, you know, they have a very strong component of mm-hmm. poetry. And then, so for me, it's very interesting to see how they are finding their own literary language and being so transgressive, no? So, uh-huh. yes.
Could you talk a little bit about what prompted your interest in this topic?
Well, you can see this boom of women writers in Latin America being published and mm-hmm. all this, and I myself have a background in creative writing. I write poetry, and I always feel very, I want to honor the legacy of the first women writers that had the bravery to write despite of these very patriarchal dynamics of the literary world in mm-hmm. Latin America. So I want to go back to their writings and see their relevance in the present. It's not something that is just in the past, but mm-hmm. right now we're reading these writers more, and they're so relevant for us to understand the power of their explorations in their own artistic endeavors, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So for me, it's very inspiring, and I think they're very, as I said, relevant. So their writings are very present, you know? Mm-hmm. For example, I'm studying one novel by Harmonia Sommer, who was an Uruguayan writer. The title is The Naked Woman. It was translated recently to English, and they call it like the feminist icon novel of Latin America. Okay. So, and it's about this woman who, when she, in her third year birthday, she decided just to leave her home, left her husband, and go to the woods and, you know, wander in the woods and taking her head off and then putting it back. Of course, it's a fantastic novel, but it's so fascinating to see this rebellious figure and how she portrayed that with a very sophisticated, intricated poetic language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Your work also raises awareness about transformative potentiality, both in the realms of the political and the poetic. What is transformative potentiality?
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. That's a big question. Well, I guess I don't have like just one answer. I think it's an exploration in my own research. I like to think of poetry and literature as devices that allowed us to resignify certain words, concepts of the world through, you know, awakening the possibilities of imagination so we can reshape constraining forms of understanding mm-hmm. our bodies, our sexuality, our gender, performativity, and our relationship with other living creatures, no? So for me, transforming potentiality talks about like the capacity of poetic language to change our views of the world and in a way, it has a political force as well, because mm-hmm. we are, you know, finding ways to imagine other futures in which we feel more free to rearrange what constrains us as individuals and collectives who are diverse and rich in mm-hmm. many ways. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Very cool. So I'm hearing in transformative potentiality, there is this opportunity to explore, you know, the rebellious and the transgressive from a queer perspective, which I know is part of your work as well. Could you dive in a little more to the different ways you explore queer perspectives in your work?
Of course. Thank you for your question. It's interesting because none of the authors that I'm studying, they were like queer, as they didn't say that, hey, I'm a lesbian or something like that.
Right, right.
It's more about a gaze, no?
Yeah.
You know, how I can approach these books and in a way that it challenges the normativity of bodies and of gender traits, you know? So for me, the queer perspective, which is connected with the post-feminist approach to bodies and to minds and subjectivity, it's more about questioning the fixation of what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a man, what it means to be a human. Mm. And so it's important to notice that, you know, queer, it's a term that comes from, you know, the United States. And of course, it has this history behind. So it's a little problematic to apply this term when studying Latin America.
Sure.
I'm aware of that. So sometimes we play with the term. So we write it, for example, sometimes I write it down, not queer as Q-U-E-R, but queer as it sounds in Spanish as C-U-I-R. Mm-hmm. Just exploring like how the queer would dialogue with the complexities of Latin American context and Latin American literature. So for me, this is not something that I condemn but it's something that I see as a possibility. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's nice. I don't know if that responds to your question.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Juliana, you also currently teach a freshman writing seminar on the craft of storytelling with a focus on transgressive bodies. What is the role of narrative in our construction and understanding of the world? These are some questions that you address. And how do you actually connect to literatures and cultures of romance languages in this course?
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I'm very happy teaching this course. It is the second time I'm teaching. Mm-hmm. It has been a great opportunity. So in this course, I propose narratives as a very essential tool of mm-hmm. our way of creating meaning of life and ourselves, and also how important it is to be conscious of how are we building up these narratives, because they can be very nurturing mm-hmm. and transformative, but at the same time, they could be very damaging and violent. So how can we be more conscious and be more responsible of how are we shaping our own narratives? So I want my students to be aware of what things they can change about their life, their view of life and social and cultural realities, to be aware of the plasticity of language, like how literature and art in general are always challenging the things that we take for granted. So at the end, it's not like there is this division about fiction and not fiction, but our academic writing and creative writing, but at the end, they're all narratives. We're using language in order to build up our own versions of the world. And nobody has the last word about what is true or what is not. No. Yeah.
Do your students craft their own story as part of the assignments in this course?
Yes, of course. The way I invited them to approach the reading of these novels and this poetry that I show them and the films, because we also watch films, it's how can they create their own narratives based on their imagination and concerns, intellectual and vital concerns, in dialogue with these devices. No, so it's more about how they explore their own possibilities in language by imitating some elements of these the artistic styles of these writers and filmmakers, but always building up a very personal narratives. Of course, we work also on academic writing, but I believe that still you as a person, you're behind your words. There is no neutrality in writing, no? So there is a personal component that is very important, because we are not like AI, you know, we're not computers, we're still people. Sure. So I want them to explore their own humanness in their writing. Yeah,
that's great.
As a teacher of romance languages, what is your favorite tip for language teachers to make language learning engaging and relevant for students?
I'll say passion. I mean, for me, Spanish is not just a tool, or languages in general. We are in love with our languages. We care about words. We know the importance that languages has on our experience as humans in this world. So for me, it's how to convey that passion, that love for the languages that we're teaching. And of course, some kind of rigor, but languages are alive and they're constantly changing. Yeah. And there is no a better way of speaking Spanish especially in Spanish, or at least in Spanish, the diversity of the language in Latin America, like it's very valuable that they value that diversity and plasticity, no?
Absolutely. So I know that writing a dissertation is a huge undertaking.
Oh, yes.
But are there any other projects you currently have in the works?
Yes, of course. Well, first, I'm working on a translation project with a colleague that she already got her PhD at English department in Cornell. And we're translating some poems by Emilia Ayarza, which is a Colombian poet from the 20th century that is part of my dissertation. Mm-hmm. And because they're not English translations mm-hmm. of her poems. I've been just translating fragments, but right now we want to translate it into English, like a selection of her work.
That's exciting.
The other project is more a creative project. I've been working on my a book of poetry for many years, so I'm slow, but I always, you know, open space for that, and because it's very important for me, no?
Yeah.
Well, there are other things, like, you know, a Congress coming that I'm waiting for a response, mm-hmm. and, some papers that I want to send for publishing based on my dissertation.
Nice.
Oh, but, you know, I need to focus.
Absolutely. Yeah. So your own poetry, in what language or languages do you write?
Well, in Spanish.
Okay.
Sometimes I do some translations to English. Mm-hmm. And, that enriches a lot the creative process.
Sure.
No? When distant yourself from your own language, it's very helpful to be more playful and writing or in different ways, like being more experimental. Mm-hmm. So, and it's a very, you need a lot of patience, especially with poetry, no?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So I really want to share my work, and in my social media, sometimes I do some performative readings of my poetry. I've published some fragments or pieces, and I want to be read more.
Yeah.
But I'm patiently finishing this first project.
Yeah. Well, yes. One step at a time.
Exactly.
And this is actually, we're going to shamelessly plug one of our own events that is coming up in April. April is National Poetry Month. And on April 17th at Cornell, we will run our Sweet Poetry event again, where we invite students to read poetry. And who knows, dear audience, maybe you will hear an original from Juliana that day.
Okay. Wow.
You just
I would never know. Good heaven.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's a great seg to ask about where our listeners can find out more about you and about your work.
Of course. Well, you can follow me on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I have a link there from the New York Poetry Review, in which you find some of my poems. And right now, I'm working on an online page to share more my academic writing, also my creative writing, but it's on the works. It will eventually show at my Instagram, but in the meantime, you can just follow me there, and I hope to, you know, putting things out soon. Yes.
Nice. Wonderful. Well, Juliana, this was really fascinating. It's lovely chatting with you and learning more about all the things you're doing, of which there are many. Before we sign off, we would like to ask you to share a word in a language that you speak, you love, you are learning, you may want to learn, that doesn't exist in English, but you wish it did.
Yes, of course. Well, I'm thinking about this word in Spanish that is sobremesa. Mm-hmm. I love that word, and actually it's very connected to Colombian culture. And sobremesa is the moment after dinner when you stay in the table with your family or friends to chat and talk about, you know, different things and, you know, sharing your own experiences. And, you know, it's a very lovely moment to share. And I love that word because it's a practice that is not that common now that we're just eat because we need to eat and when we run somewhere else. But sobremesa talks about another pace of living in which eating also led to conversation and unity and, you know, a sense of community, you know?
Nice.
So, yes.
Wonderful. I like that.
Yeah, I do too. Mm. And we're so happy to have had you on the podcast. Thank you so much for speaking of language with us, Juliana.
Thank you so much for the invitation, and this is a wonderful opportunity to share, and yes, I'm very grateful.
Great. Next week, we're joined by Dr. Tricia Bertram-Galland, who will speak with us about academic integrity in the face of artificial intelligence.
Until then.
Auf Wiederhören.
The Language Resource Center is located on the ground floor of Stimson Hall on Cornell's main campus in Ithaca, New York. Check us out on the web at lrc.cornell.edu.
And follow Cornell LRC on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Speaking of Language is produced by Angelica Kramer and Sam Lupowitz.
Recorded by Sam Lupowitz.
Original music by Sam Lupowitz, Dan Gable, and Joe Gibson.
Thanks also to the College of Arts and Sciences at Cornell University.
As a reminder, the ideas and opinions expressed on this podcast do not reflect those of the College of Arts and Sciences or any other official entity of Cornell University.
We thank our listeners, and do stay tuned for our next episode.